Give me an example of your favorite kind of client.
I'd say insurance companies. They got money.
Insurance. There we go. You are the premier, right, system for insurance agencies and their agents. Why? You can put an angle on any of the features that your product has tailored specifically to these people. And you can dig into their pain points because insurance agencies have very specific pain points that are going to be quite different than mattress companies, for example, right?
Yeah, they have retention problems.
Well, exactly. You got to, especially it's like, okay, what do people think of insurance salesmen? There's so many creative things that you can do that will play to the insecurities of the individual agent. Because that individual agent is going to have different insecurities and things that hold them back from making the sales than someone that's selling Cutco knives, for example, right?
And now the man you've been waiting for, John, the sales machine, Rankin!
Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest is a highly respected marketing mentor who has helped dozens of startups scale from six to seven figures. She helps entrepreneurs fix their sales and marketing strategies, build effective teams, and develop as leaders to create sustainable and profitable seven-figure marketing machines. Her clients include SaaS Academy, Elevate Leadership, Chic Collection, Geico Renewables, Reactive Core, Fortress, Floxy, Aquavita, Redress, Cyvent, Bea Pila Design, Bosa, Zorba Collective, Urban Hotels and Resorts, Space Development, Hotel La Similia, Newport Hotel, and more. A Google and HubSpot certified expert. She runs the popular podcast Marketing for Startups and has been featured on CNN and in numerous webinars and forums all over the world. Based in Miami, she has built successful global brands all over the world. She is the founder of Ugly Ventures. Please welcome Victoria Hajar.
Very nice. Thank you.
In actuality, the podcast is a lead magnet. The book is a lead magnet.
It's a lead magnet, obviously.
You would be proud of me, maybe.
Exactly. You're doing all the things. I love it.
Well, I'm doing all the things, but I've rebuilt the software three times. So
listen, Dan always says if it's not breaking every 6 months, you're not really in growth mode. So your systems should all be failing you every 6 months or so if you're growing quickly. So that's a good sign, I think. I look at it as a positive thing.
Yeah. Well, I made all the mistakes Dan talks about.
Yeah. Good. Good. But that's the point. That's what everyone does.
I'm 2 million in. So I forgot about that MVP, just believing and knowing what I do is the right fucking thing. But, you know, you drink your own Kool-Aid.
Yeah. And that's where it gets really expensive. But, I mean, everyone does it because I think everyone thinks they know what the prospects need. They think they know what the clients need. And it's a process of iteration and improvement and iteration and improvement. And no matter what, and no matter how much money you spend, right, you're always going to learn those lessons. And it's like, it's on both sides, on the product side, it's on the brand side, on the offer side, on the sales side, you know how it goes. So you can't get around it. There really are no, the thing that sucks, but the truth is that there's not really a ton of shortcuts. You can have great mentors, you can have great guidance, but you got to put in the work. You know what I mean?
Yep. That's why I started this podcast. So I'm a new guy, but I'm not new in the sales world. I literally have built and scaled tens of thousands of people in sales and have an organization now about 700. It was about 4,000, but it was in direct sales. So the psychology and the methodology is what I put into this technology. And now it's all about getting the word out. So I started this podcast 3 months ago, and this is number 38. So I'm turning and burning.
And let me tell you, your team is on it. So you practice what you preach because your systems are sharp.
Right on. Well, I'm glad to hear that. They're all here. Hey, guys. They can hear you.
So are you in Vegas?
Sometimes. I'm in Manila right now.
I thought so. I was like, he must be in Asia. I was like, this is a funny time because I'm in Miami. But that's wild. How'd you get to Manila? I got to know.
30 years. 30 years ago, I got out of the military and I was looking for a sales job. I literally intentionally wanted to make $100,000 a year to buy my mom a house. So I had no education except for, you know, driving submarines, which, you know, not a lot of civilian jobs.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So anyway, I could fix the central atmospheric monitoring system on the space shuttle or submarine, and no one would hire me.
All right. So you get out of the military and you're like, what am I going to do next? I do know that you got to Denver because I do listen to your podcast. So I know that that was part of your story.
So yeah. So anyway, I got a job going door to door, selling baggy pants. I needed money. I was out of money. My mom's house was foreclosed on. I gave her all my savings. My brother wrecked my car before I got out and I still had to pay for it. So I'm like, I need some money now.
Okay. Okay.
With this organization. And within 3 months, they gave me my own office. I moved from California to Colorado. Within a year and a half, close to 2 years, I opened 4 branches for them. And then they sent me overseas. And then from there, I went to India, Philippines, Indonesia, Singapore, South Korea, Venezuela. And then I started training people in Taiwan, Thailand, Malaysia. And then I started coaching other CEOs how to build and scale a multi-million dollar sales force. One thing led to another, building another organization. 6 years ago, I had my boy. I have a son. His name is Sky. And so he's in school now. And I just decided that, you know, I want to keep him here. He's in Taekwondo. He's got an Olympic champion trainer. Yeah. So here I am.
I actually, my career started in Asia, actually. So we have a little bit of a similar, when I graduated, well, so I graduated school and I was in New York and I was like, I gotta get out of here. Cause I grew up in New Jersey. I went to school in New York and it was one of these things where I had a job from before graduation and I just got this itch and I was like, I can't, like, this could be the rest of my life, you know? And I have a lot of friends that it was the rest of their lives, right? Like 20 years later, they're still in the same spot. So I got the itch and I picked up and I moved to Beijing and I was like, I don't know about this. So moved to Beijing, and just started just like hustling. Like I started a couple companies and then I got linked up with some property developers, up in Shanghai, and I ended up spending about 6 years in Shanghai. And I mean, being in Asia, people don't understand like the quality of life, right? You got the maid, you probably got several, you know, maids that help with your house and help with the kids. And it's like, it's just a different lifestyle. And it was such a great experience, but that's where I cut my teeth in marketing because I primarily work with growth startups and scale ups. And so in Shanghai, when I, you know, out of school, kind of doing my own thing, I started a pearl company. I started an events company. I did all this stuff. But I got into hospitality and I really started learning marketing through being a marketer at a hotel, but then working with investors and property developers, we ended up creating boutique hotel brands across Asia and Sri Lanka. So across China. And then there was also property in Sri Lanka. And I just was absorbing everything because we were, you know, I was working directly with founders, directly with investors, and you know, we were creating projects. We were getting, you know, we were getting individual investors for projects. And it's one of those things where you're in these environments and it sounds like you're the same. When you get these opportunities to kind of like get shoved into shit that's beyond your skill level, right, at a young age. So I remember I was like 24 and I was managing marketing for several boutique hotel properties. We were overseeing brand, you know, we were doing 100,000 plus rebrand projects for properties in across Asia. And it was a really freaking cool experience. But unlike your experience, the, you know, always working with founders and like investors directly and stakeholders, you know, through the years, you don't have that mentorship to just show you the playbook, right? And it sounds a little bit like your experience where, you know, if you work for, you know, a big organization and you go up the ranks, you've got, your boss and your managers that are like showing you the SOPs, and you're kind of every step along the way, you're kind of following the path, and maybe you iterate and put your own spice into it. But for me, I've always worked directly with entrepreneurs, and, you know, some have been really great leaders, some have been not so great leaders, and just freaking figured it out. So I've sort of built my career from just one trial by fire after the other in front of investors, just figuring it out, you know? And so what I teach and what I've built and what I implement with clients, because I've worked as a fractional CMO, fractional marketing director for growth startups and scale-ups for about 10, 15 years, you know, and I've sort of pivoted to, I'm still kind of in the daily grind. I do the fractional work and I'm in it with clients, but I've also like packaged up a process, because over the time when you're doing something like your experience over and over and over again, and I know you talk about this a lot on your podcast, but it's about seeing those patterns, right? It's those patterns. And so I've had this great opportunity of working, you know, it's China and Dubai and the UK and Mexico, always building marketing teams, working with sales teams. And it's over the years just become like a playbook. How do you set this up and get it to a point where it's systemized and measurable, right? Because a lot of times in the startup place, you have really smart founders, maybe that's like founder-led sales, which I'm sure you have a love-hate relationship with, people that, you know, they've gotten themselves to one point by muscling it, right? And then it comes to a point where it's like, okay, now I got to get this shit systemized and do it in a process so we can measure it and we can hire people and you're not like doing it all yourself. So that's kind of the point where I usually come in and sort of let's see what's working, right? And let's see how we can grow this and how we can scale this. But it's a new adventure every time, which I'm sure you can relate to, right? It's like you got the playbooks, but then there's always a curveball, right? There's always these things that happen that are new experiences and people problems and legal problems or who knows, partner disagreements. It's just crazy. It's crazy.
You know, this is really refreshing for me. You talk about the playbook.
Yes, I know. Well, exactly. And I know that that's what you've done, because at the end of the day, you know it. It's like Tony Robbins says, right? And it's just so true for business. So much of this is about mastering the basics. Really. It's like, do you have your systems in place that are measurable, right? Do you have systems for hiring? Do you have systems for coaching and performance check-ins and all of these things? And it's not usually about like a whole new crazy way of executing things. It's like, no, let's just get a path and we stick to it, so we have enough of a consistency to be able to measure and see what's really going on. A lot of times in the growth startup and scale up kind of size company, which I'm not, I know maybe you deal with bigger companies typically, but I'm sure you have a little bit of everything. But typically it's like, you know, it's kind of like so much of a shit show because everyone's sort of like doing everything and no one's really aligned. But when someone like you or I comes in and just puts that through line and gets that alignment, and it's like, oh my God, now we can see what's really happening. Where a lot of times there's chaos, right? There's kind of chaos.
I like calling it organized chaos. If you're profitable, then it's organized chaos.
Right, exactly.
If not, then it's just chaos.
You're freaking
and,
chaos.
And truth be told, I wrote this Life Mastery Playbook because, you know, I came from a background with a single mom on welfare, food stamps, like a lot of nonsense. And the father was never really told. I didn't have a father. Like they didn't tell me the truth about who was the father or whatever. Anyway, I did this. I wrote this because I went to a Tony Robbins seminar and everybody was asking me, John, what life management system do you have? And I'm like, what? I didn't get the memo. Call me the dumb guy because I don't have a life management system. And they're like, and then they're walking around saying, so did you get a breakthrough? Did you get a breakthrough? And I'm like, I've had some breakdowns, but I don't know what you're talking about, breakthroughs, you know, but I've been broken down a bit. I keep getting back up. So anyway, when I had my son, I made millions of dollars in Asia. I like literally learned to speak the language in Indonesia. And anyway, got ripped off from my director, $3.5 million, stole my asset, blacklisted me from the country. And I literally had to leave that country on a boat. I took a boat from Batam Island to Singapore, literally to create a new work permit. And their immigration wasn't figured out, right? So it wasn't online, just so I could come back, fight, and get my company back. And it was crazy. Long story short, so I was in Tony Robbins' Platinum Partnership. I told him about it, and he's like, oh, you'll figure it out. Are you signing up again? And I'm like, probably not, dude. Anyway, on that boat, when I was coming back to Indonesia, and it's only a 45-minute trip, but it seemed like hours, right? And literally, the guys were hunting me, trying to get rid of me, because, you know, it's a lot of money there. I literally broke down and wept. I felt like a total failure, that I failed my family, my people, everybody. But it was incredibly powerful, because when I stopped crying, I realized never again. And I wrote a framework called the 5 Steps to Clarity, which is now a part of this book, where, you know, you clarify, okay, where are you at right now? What do you want? Why do you want it? How are you going to get it? And how to check and measure to make sure you do get it. So like, this book is a playbook, how to keep score. And I literally wrote it for my own organization and for my son's guy, because I'm like, I've cultivated leadership. I pushed the boundaries to lead an organization, and literally by learning from the street and doing it. And so for me, if anything happens to me, I want my boy to know how to play, right? I want him to have a playbook for life. And when you talk about marketing and you talk about building and scaling companies, you got to be able to manage, track, and measure everything in order to improve it. So I am 100% in alignment with what you're saying. I literally created the sales machine, other companies to plug and play it in their business, so that they can manage, track, measure, align, and reward anybody within the organization. And initially, I was running 3,000 salespeople, and I was falling behind. Our products were outdated. Our systems were outdated. The training was outdated. My leadership, therefore, was outdated. So I like went back into the lab, and I said, you know, this isn't going to work. I made millions again after, you know, losing it. I said, you know, I'm doing great, but my people are hurting. The organization's hurting. So this is unacceptable, because if they're hurting and we're then it's my failure. So I went back and started creating gamification on whiteboards, leaderboards, levels of development for people incorporated with teamwork, so that people know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And then I grew the company by 300%, and then I grew 20 other companies by, on average, 101%. And I'm like, this is incredible. Like, I'm onto something here. But then the same problem started happening. I could not keep up with making calls, traveling every weekend to different sales offices all over Southeast Asia. So I wanted to automate it. I went to Salesforce. I went to Zoho. I went to HubSpot. I went to NetSuite, all these different companies. And I said, I need your help. I need you to incorporate all of these elements so I can automate what I do, like driving sales. I need automated rewards, recognition, competition, compensation. I need it dialed into their goals so that there's levels of development to retain them. And everybody was like, yeah.
Yeah. And those products. Yeah, of course. Because you're making a sales coach, a sales leader in a SaaS product, where those are CRMs, they're tracking pipeline, right? It's like, it doesn't have that.
Yeah, they're address books. Their CRMs are address books. They're free. You can buy them for $1. HubSpot's nothing. So I'm like, I need this. And they're like, well, we don't do that. So I said, screw it. And I built it myself. And I built it with a patent-pending framework so that People know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. So it's got a performance brain, and it's got a SMART framework in there. So you're from SAS, so you'll understand this. It's basically five modules. It's got a sales CRM. Sales CRM, yeah, that's one of the tentacles to keep track of the data. But then it's got a marketing campaign platform. Then it has the brain, which is accountability through achievement. Then it has customer retention, and it has training. So that's a SMART framework that's patent pending. So it's a big ass system. But my biggest challenge in marketing right now is getting out of the box of CRM, because a lot of people say, oh, you're a CRM. No, we're not. We're a total sales system.
Well, who are you? Who is your client? Like, who exactly are you targeting?
So we're agnostic. If you got five salespeople or 5,000, we got you. We can set up a total automated sales system for you to sustainably scale, where you can set and forget, because everyone in the system starts with their own individual goals and collective goals with assigned training so that they know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And we manage, track, measure, align, and set an automated reward system within it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's my thing. Okay, I'm going to just toss some ideas out to you, because I think CRMs are a really, really good example of this point. CRMs, like when you take off like the dressings, like the brand, right? A lot of them essentially have the same functionality, right? So the question is, why do some businesses choose to go with certain CRMs over another? Is because what a lot of these companies have done really well is they've like niched down to serve a specific sector, right? A specific vertical, and they've gone all in. And the end user doesn't really realize that it's all the same shit, right? So yeah, I mean, like Salesforce has a name behind it, right? And so a lot of bigger corporations use Salesforce. But the functionality of Salesforce could also work at a dentist. But the dentist chooses to go with the CRM that's for dentists. And the real estate people choose to go for the CRM that's for real estate people. Now, yeah, there could be like little tweaks that make it like tailored to that specific industry. But more or less, it's all the same shit. So I feel like when you go and you're trying to give any product that is industry agnostic or can serve everyone, people's heads tend to not be able to wrap themselves around it. But if you go and you're like, listen, and I'm not saying that you have to do this forever, but I would say pick one segment that you could go all in on, right? That you're going to tailor your website, all your comms, everything. And you're going to say, all right, give yourself a target. I'm going to stick with this segment until I reach X amount of revenue, and then know that I've kind of like capped out the opportunities there. Because a lot of folks, what they tend to do is like, they want to talk to everyone. They want to capture all the opportunities. But the problem is that you're not actually talking to anyone. What you really want to happen is when a prospect goes to your website, they're like, oh, this is for me. They get me. They know what my needs are. And that's where that narrowing down becomes really helpful, because again, there was actually like a study that was done that I had seen by one of these brand agencies that I follow. And basically what she had done and taken like five or six websites for CRMs and like took the logo away. And the idea here was that like, they're so interchangeable, but what happens is that you're just like battling for market share, because it's like you're marketing to all the same people. But when you decide to kind of narrow down and go deep, like let's go deep into, you know, one segment, and you're just speaking to them, you'll be able to get a strong hold with that one segment, and you'll be able to more easily communicate all of these features. So let's say that you're like, I don't know, let's pick someone that has like a big sales force. Ooh, give me an example of your favorite kind of client.
I'd say insurance companies. They got money.
Insurance. There we go. You are the premier, right, system for insurance agencies and their agents. Why? You can put an angle on any of the features that your product has, tailored specifically to these people. And you can dig into their pain points, because insurance agencies have very specific pain points that are going to be quite different than, you know, mattress companies, for example, right?
Yeah, they have retention problems.
Exactly. You got to, especially it's like, okay, what do people think of insurance salesmen? There's so many creative things that you can do that will play to the insecurities of the individual agent, right? Because that individual agent is going to have different insecurities and things that hold them back from making the sales than someone that's selling Cutco knives, for example, right? It's a totally different psychological game. So once you start tailoring all your message and communication to solving that problem for that one group, and of course, like the total tangible market for insurance companies is gigantic. Like the opportunity is ginormous. You can make a shit ton of money just going into balls to the wall with this one vertical, right?
Victoria, I'm falling in love with you.
But I'm saying, like, this is the problem. That's what holds people back, is that there's this fear that, yes, like a lot of what we create, you know what? It's so funny because I just this morning, I was talking to someone that gave me the example of the Stanley Cup. Okay. The Stanley Cup, it's like everyone's got this freaking Stanley Cup. I don't know if it made it to Manila. You know what I'm talking about?
The Stanley Cup? No.
Okay. All right. Well, you've been saved from it. You just Google it when we get off. So it's just like a freaking container that holds your water and keeps it cold. Like every other thing that retains its chilliness or its warmth. Like it's not that special. And till about a couple of years ago, it was like only like mechanics and like construction workers had these kinds of cups. And they had like a sizable business, right? But they were just, you know, they had kind of just like, listen, we've established our spot here. We've done all we can with this. And we're making, you know, $80, $100 million and we're gotten a good business, right? But they've like quadrupled their revenue in the past like year because they said, you know what? Now we're going to go balls to the wall on this segment and we're going to target housewives. And we're going to do it in cute colors. And let me tell you, everyone has a freaking Stanley Cup in all the different colors. There's even subsidiary, like ancillary businesses that have popped up to be like warmers for your straw on the freaking Stanley Cup. Everyone has them. And they're like $60. They're ridiculous. And they.
My brother years ago, I brought all my family to Asia, gave them vacations and stuff like that, just because I want to see them and I'm too busy. So I just, you know, hey, come and see me. My brother's like, yeah, can you get me some Yeti cups? And I'm like, what's a Yeti cup? Because I've spent 30 years in Asia. I don't know what a Yeti cup is. And then he came out and he goes, you know, a Yeti. And I'm like, no, I don't know a Yeti. And it's just a damn tumbler. I'm like, dude, man, it's just a tumbler. No, but it's a Yeti. I'm like, oh my God.
This is so tumbler. Gorgeous. You're going to get me. Because in Asia, we have, go ahead, I cut you off.
No, and so now there was one on Shark Tank. I love watching Shark Tank. I laugh my ass off on different, because my mind is always working. You know, there's this now, there's one called Coldable. Like it's just keeps stuff colder. It's the same damn shit.
That's what I'm saying. And this is such an interesting study in what we're talking about, because like, okay, so in Asia, you're going to get this, right? So when people come over from overseas and you're living in Asia and they want to go to like the fake market, right? Because I'm sure in Manila, they got fake markets, right? Just they got.
Sure. The knockoffs.
The knockoff market, right? And they're amazing. But there comes a point where you're at the knockoff market and you see all this shit that people go wild for, because like back in the States, it's something like the Yeti cup or the Stanley cup. But if you went to the fake market and you saw these names, they would be interchangeable to you. They'd have no meaning. It's like it's all the same shit, because when you remove the label, you understand like the cup. It all does the same thing. But here's where this is where it diverges. It's all about the communication. It's like, who are you serving? And it's the same damn cup in the same damn colors, but we're solving the problems of this specific client in this specific way. And so we're tailoring all of our communication, the website, the socials, the copy, everything is speaking into the lives of this person. And when you're speaking into the lives of a specific individual and they feel like they get you, that brand gets me. They're going to fix, they believe that that's going to fix their problem because you're speaking to them. And the problem is if you don't decide on who you're really going after narrowly, that you, if you're not speaking to that one person, you're trying to speak to everyone, you're really speaking to no one. And so it becomes more difficult to convert.
Yeah, you know, Jay Abraham, it's one thing to, a lot of people say they know shit, right? And there's a lot of full of shit marketers out there. That's the fact, yes. Right? And can be a coach today. Everybody can be a marketer today because we have unlimited resources to do it. However, when you listen to people like yourself or a Jay Abraham, Jay Abraham says, if you want to be incredibly successful at marketing, you've got to be able to explain people's problems to them better exactly. than they can explain it themselves. And when you can do that, that's when you can scale your business. So I'm 100% in alignment. Doesn't know that I'm aware of that, but doesn't mean I know how to do marketing. Like, you want me to build and scale a sales team for you? Come on. Been doing that for 30 years. I can do it in my sleep. And now I've automated it with the sales machine. Like, you seriously want to build and scale? No problem. I got you. However, marketing, oh, Victoria, I am a work in progress.
Well, you know what? It's so interesting because it's so similar, though. Because when you're face-to-face with a prospect trying to close a deal, it's a similar situation. You're going to use kind of psychology or just sort of like your own human understanding of how people work. And you're going to make that connection with that prospect. And marketing is doing the same exact thing, right? You're going to do an objection handling, right? You're going to be painting the picture, right? You're going to be, you know, you're basically selling the transformation, regardless if you're selling dental floss or you're selling a SaaS product. I love what we're talking about, this machine thing, because it's like these principles are industry agnostic, right? But the process of sales, it's like we go through this process where we know we need to do all these things to create the desire, to handle the objections, to show that transformation, to make them feel confident buying with all this stuff. So when we're doing it in marketing, we're doing it just kind of on a more macro scale. And the problem with the only unifying difference is that idea of the segmentation, because you take the one person that you're with face to face, and then you say, okay, we're going to take that person and we're going to create the avatar of that person. And that's who we're going to talk to in all of our marketing. So it's really like, if you're going from the sales perspective, it's like, take the person that you love selling to, that when you're face to face, it's easiest to sell to them, right? That they get it, right? That they're your ideal, literally your ideal client. That's why we say this shit, right? But we're going to take that and we're just going to say, okay, now we're going to take this person, this character, and everything we do in marketing is just talking to that person as if the conversation we were having one-on-one or the scripts we were giving our sales team. And and that's how you start, right? Now, obviously when you're huge and you sort of are big enough where you're like, hey, I've tapped out this segment. I've gotten as far as I can with this one segment. I've hit everyone. Now I'm ready to get into a different segment. The problem is that most people, there's so much left on the table with one segment and they don't go deep. They try to go wide. So maybe they get a little traction and instead of going deeper and deeper and deeper into that, which there's a lot of riches down there, they're like, hey, let me just make this like ancillary product or this other thing for someone else because I can, right? Oh, I think I could do this and that makes sense. No, it's just how deep can you go with that one segment? Because there's so much there. You can't even imagine. I love using this example because it's such a great reminder of this. So I have one founder that I work with. It's a roofing company, okay? It's a woman that's in a roofing company, right? Talk about like something that no one thinks about. And she's in my accelerator program. I have like an accelerator program where I work hand in hand with founders. And I show up with them every, it's like having a marketing coach, marketing director in with them. But instead of being, you know, like a course, I'm like hands-on with them, right? I meet with them every week. So I'm in there with her and she's telling me about all these organizations she's a part of for women in roofing. And I'm like, how does that exist? She's like, there are thousands of people across the country that are in this Women in Roofing. And we do all of these projects and there's conferences just for us and there's different chapters. And I'm like, and so she told me the story about this financial advisor that came to talk to her group. And the financial advisor was a financial advisor, could be a financial advisor for anyone. But this woman ended up like 10Xing her business because she positioned herself as an expert for women in construction. Incredible. Like you wouldn't even imagine that segment existed. But there are riches in the niches, as they say, right? Because this woman needs a financial advisor. But it's like these people need. So, I mean, you can really hone it together where you're like, okay, this is a woman in roofing. She can go with like a generic financial advisor. They're all going to tell the same thing. But no, she's going to want to go with the financial advisor that knows her business, like that knows her specific needs, the kind of insurance she needs and all of these things. That's like where you can go deep and deep and deep.
I came up with an acronym to make us fabulous. A lot of people talk about features and then, you know, marketers said you got to talk about benefits and or a lot of internet people. But when you're in a SaaS sales room and you've got four or five people in there, you got geeks, you got IT people. And you know what they care about? They don't care about the benefits because they're geeks. They care about the features, right? So then you've got other middle management, the people driving the organization, they want to know the advantages of your products over the competition, unlike others, right? So you've got to dial in the features. You got to know what are the advantages of your features that are unlike everybody else. And the founder, the owner, he don't give a shit about any of that. He only cares about the benefit. He only cares about the benefit. But you got to know your audience. You got to be able to read the room when you're making that sale or creating a new partnership. Because I don't believe it's about closing business. I believe it is about the beginning of a new relationship to have a sustainable, scalable business. It's all about service, right? I call it fabulous. Features, benefits, and benefits. Fab. Yeah, it's fab.
I love it.
So, if you really want to dial in your value proposition, like you're saying, it's just like in the boardroom, you've got to do that in your marketing. You've got to be fabulous. You've got to know the features, the advantages, and the benefits because your audience could be the geeks looking at, doing the due diligence for the management. And the management wants to know the advantages so their ass doesn't get fired being status quo. And it's all about at the end of the day. Like a lot of people say, a sales process can take 6 months in SaaS. And I'm like, bullshit. If you're talking to the owner and he understands the benefits, he'll say, fucking sign me up, John. Let's get it going.
Okay, but this is so juicy. This is so good because you can realize, right, all of those different stakeholders, right, this part of the decision, right? When you're going into sort of bigger organization, you have all of these different levels that you have to convince, right? But that is even a stronger argument for zooming out to look at this macro level and getting very dialed in on that segment. Because again, like the CTO, for example, for a telephone company is going to have different concerns and ideas and whatever than maybe the financial controller for a product-based business. I don't know. And so you have to understand is that when you're building all of these scripts and all of this communication strategies around, like, we're all talking the same language, right? It's going to be much easier, more effective to create all of that communication because you don't have to consider, in one decision, in one vertical, there's already so many people that's part of the decision, right, that you just mentioned. And so another thing that I see a lot of sort of growth startups making a mistake in is, again, when you don't narrow in, you're spreading your resources too thin. Right? Like I've seen some SaaS businesses that, again, they want to capture everything. So they have all these different landing pages, right? It's like, we serve educators, we serve, chefs, we serve scientists, right? And it's like, here's what we do for scientists. Here's this. So when your prospect comes to the site, they have to like work to figure out where they fit into this matrix. And listen, for some humongo organizations, like if you go to like a Gartner, for example, and they've got the brand awareness, they've got all the money, they've got all of the prestige. Yeah, people will take the time to filter themselves out. But if you're like a company that no one's ever heard of, you got 3 seconds. It's like 3 seconds you have once people hit your website to have them understand that you can solve their problem and get them interested in talking to you and learning more. It's 3 seconds. And so we need to make it dumb, stupid, simple, that communication. And the only way we can do it is...
I'm good at dumb, stupid, simple. That's how I created the fabulous framework.
I love fab. So that's what I would say. So here's my thing I had to tell you, though. You got to write a book about this Indonesia experience. Is that the next book?
Well, I can put it in the sales machine. The sales machine is the next book, because if I'm listening to you, Victoria, or Alex Hormozi, or I was just with Alex 3 weeks ago. He had a private event.
Oh, wow. Oh, he's in Vegas. Well, were you in Vegas? Did you see him in Vegas?
I was in Vegas, yeah. And so I was hanging out with him, and then I went and hung out with Brad Lee. Brad Lee's a friend. Hung out with him for a week. He owns Lightspeed VT, a software company. So I want to emulate their success. I don't want to be Alex Hormozi. I don't want to be Brad Lee. I'm pretty good at just being me. So because it's effortless. Yeah, it's a lot less stressful. And nor do I need to be fucking anybody else. I just need to be me, and I need to solve the biggest problems. So I'm with these people, and you know, if I look at the industry or hear what they're doing or look at what Dan Martell does. And you work with Dan. So essentially, my goal, so by the first 30 years of my life, I've been empowering ordinary people with opportunity, products, services, and training to become extraordinary and really transform their life. Literally, 20 car programs, house programs, giving away Piaget watches. These are ordinary people that I've empowered with products, with services, my training to scale their businesses. So now that I built the sales machine, I did that to automate it to help companies, not just individuals, but companies all over the world. And I want to spend the next 30 years empowering ordinary companies to become extraordinary with the sales machine. And so the podcast, what you're teaching, and you're just spitting out golden nuggets. You're giving golden nuggets for that people can use, ordinary companies can align and identify with your psychology, your methodology, and literally transform their business. So that's the purpose of the sales machine. And I can automate it for you with the software. And the book is going to be, the next book is going to be The Sales Machine, How to Build and Scale a Multi-Million Dollar Sales Force. And it can be in insurance. It can be in real estate. It can be whatever it is. But ultimately, my ultimate goal is to help ordinary companies become extraordinary with this psychology, the methodology I've used and built into technology. How do we do that? We do that by having a brain in the system where people set goals, set their KPIs, and then we automate the rewards, recognition, competition, compensation. And that way we drive the performance, but then you have to retain them. The only way to retain them is to have a learning management system, or that won't retain them. It's giving them levels of development so that they can strive and grow. Otherwise, it's going to be a transactional relationship, not a transformational relationship, and you're going to lose your people. They're going to go wherever the biggest paycheck is. But if they're growing, they're going to stay with you. If they can fulfill their purpose, they're going to stay with you. This is what I know.
Yep. So your real narrow mark, your narrow segment there is small business owners that are doing like founder-led sales, because you're saying you want to talk to them and help them to scale and grow and sort of like, because a lot of small business owners get stuck. I mean, I have people that I coach that have this problem, right? It's like, they don't know how to give it away, right? They think it's either I do it and they don't know how to put the systems in place, or they've been burned before, right? So you can communicate. A lot of people, they get burned with salespeople in terms of like, they onboard someone, they don't know what the hell they're doing. That person underperforms. They think it's all a waste of money, right? And then they get scared to try again. This is one example of people that I've worked with. I think a lot of women come up against this as well, because women typically, I'm not speaking general now, but I do have some women that I work with in my accelerator that have that issue where, you know, they don't feel empowered or confident enough to kind of loop in the next generation of people to help with their sales and to sort of grow that and to scale that, right? They don't know how to, and many founders have this problem. They don't have to transfer what comes innate to them, right? That if they've built the business with their own hands and they know their own clients so well, they don't know how to transfer that knowledge unless they come from a sales background like you, for example, and then there are founders that came from that. But a lot of founders and business owners, they're intuitively doing the sales just because they've built everything with their hands. They know the products inside and out. They know the customers inside and out. And that's what makes them good at sales. So when you're selling your product and your next book and all that, I would say if that's who you're capturing, like, talk to them. You know them so well because you've been them, right? Because there's a lot of sales leaders. You are them. Exactly. But there's a lot of sales leaders that you interview on the podcast that they've been in, you know, the Fortune 500, and they've scaled the billions and billions and billions. And yes, you can teach people how to do that. But the everyman, they're dreaming about that, but that's very far away.
You know, what's funny, Victoria, is I've had some badasses on this podcast, and there's some badass sales trainers out there.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of badass sales courses out there. I can identify, and I get value from lots of them. I invest in them myself because I'm always learning. And, yes. You know, I can pay you.
Amen. Me too.
But here's the thing. Very few people out there know how to build and scale a sales force because they've never done it. One, they can sell, but even a lot of the people I've had, legends in the field, they got like 2 salesmen, 3 salesmen, 5 salesmen. And I'm like, what? Don't you know how to recruit, train, retain, and scale a sales force? Oh, hell no. That, like, adamantly, they're like, hell no, won't do it. I've done it, and then make them superstars, and then they leave for the next organization or a bigger paycheck. I'm like, exactly, because you don't know how to build and scale.
Yeah.
And if you did, you'd be doing it. And everybody's got a course on how to sell, but no one's out there on how to build and scale a multi-million dollar sales team. Like, literally, I've managed thousands and selling FMCGs, fast-moving consumer goods. I mean, we have our own skincare product. You've heard of Proactive Solution.
Oh, sure have.
I don't own that. I don't own that, but I was a distributor. And when we were done with them, we built our own brand called Aqua Plus. Yeah, and we have our own skincare. We'll send you some of it. You'll love it. I'm telling you, it was developed by the product manager of L'Oreal for 12 years for Asian skin, for clear, beautiful skin, which you already have clear, beautiful skin. Still going to send you some. Still going to send you some as a gift. But I got to tell you, that's very few people are in that lane.
I totally freaking agree with you. And I think that this has been something that's on my mind and something that I'm seeing like out in the field just this week, where I think a lot of, especially growing businesses, it's the system. The system is the linchpin, because yes, you can get a great person in there, but you have to go into this knowing that there's always reasons that people will leave or move on or whatever. You can't say, I'm just going to groom this person, this one person, and this person leaves, and then I'm going to give up because that's too much work. It's about the systems. I don't think that enough people have that scaling mentality, because you cannot grow a business on the back of one superstar that you bring in, right? So what you're teaching is like, how do we create the environment for superstars to exist? That it's not just dumb luck that you get like the right resume or the right connection, this person works out. Most smaller businesses, they function in that way. And I have people that I'm working with right now that keep people around that are terrible for the organization because they're scared. They're scared.
And, you know, I've been there. I've been there even recently because I wasn't in the software as a service business. And so I hired these people that were supposedly rock stars, literally did not sell anything. Like, I want to swear right now, but I want to keep it clean on the podcast. But I'm telling you, full of shit. You're full of shit. You think you're an expert. Where are the sales? And I held on to them thinking, you know, well, they know what they're doing. The truth is they don't know what they're doing. If you know what you're doing, where are your sales? So a lot of people are being bullshitted out there. So how about this? What? How would you like an accountability platform to do it for you? So people know what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. And if they don't do it, it sends you a notification. Hey, you hired a bonehead or someone who's bullshitting you. So that the sales machine has that accountability brain. That's what's patent pending. Because look, you said you'll generate $1 million in sales this year. Confident? You see our solution. You know what it can do. You see it, right? Okay, so let's put your goal in the system. It's $1 million. It's going to manage, track, measure, align, and reward you along the way. So we know how many calls you made every day, how many prospects you talked to, how many demos you booked, and how much revenue you generated, right? So on track every month, I don't need to check in with you because if you're on track, and you hit your goals, it's going to send me a notification that you got a reward. You chose a Cartier watch. You're going to Hawaii. It's all in the system. Or it's going to say, red flag, alert, dude is way behind.
And that's where people know, they know, right? They know themselves.
Yes, but you're right. They're in fear. I've been living in that fear. And I'm like, what the fuck am I afraid of? I can do this in my sleep. But you know what? Even I've made that mistake. And I realize, wait a minute. If you cannot, you need to put up or shut up. And you, it's not just show up. You need to put up or shut up. Because everybody's got the gift of gab out there. But it's a lot of transactional stuff. And I'm interested in selling no one. I'm interested in selling no one, to sell or not to sell. If I cannot sell your problem, I will direct you to someone who can, and I don't want your business to sell or not to sell. I walk away from a sale. I don't need your money, right? And there's not enough of that, but I want it. Like, you're remarkable. I got to say, you're probably top three on my podcast, and there's different categories. I completely resonate with what you're saying, and I've helped people all my life, and now helping companies is just helping more people. And that's where I come from. I come from a place and space of giving, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you have, is what did you do? Who did you help? Right? So can you tell us about what was one of your most successful marketing campaigns that you've ever done and what made it so effective?
Yeah. So when I go into organizations, the objective is to organize and systemize the marketing. And I work always in the same four stages. So the first stage is always looking at the brand. So we're talking about communication, right? How are we speaking to the prospect, right? So a lot of what I do is first laying that foundation where we look at how are we upgrading the brand? And when we talk about brand, we don't talk about the colors and the logos. We talk about, do we have a system in place that is connecting with our prospect, right? Because a lot of times, again, I get into organizations and, you know, founders have gotten themselves to a certain level. And usually it's because they've muscled and pulled and pulled and pushed to get them their organization there. And they're at the moment where they don't have the time to be doing everything themselves, right? They don't have the time to be overseeing everything themselves, right? And to be really pushing it themselves because they need to work on the higher level tasks. So in order to lay the foundation for growth and kind of build a proper marketing department, we go through first brand, then we look at growth strategy, we look at team, and then we look at leadership. So brand stage is always, who are we targeting, and does our communication strategy, is it good enough for attracting the right prospects and converting them? So we look at who is our target client and exactly what are the pain points that we are speaking to. So we revamp that communication strategy. We make sure that we have really, truly one in place that's targeting the people that we want to target. And a lot of times there's this process of narrowing down and making sure that we're speaking to that one most profitable segment. So when we do go into the next stage, which is implementing the marketing growth strategy, we have that clear target in mind, right? That we're not wasting our time, energy, and effort on this kind of like disparate efforts trying to get a bunch of different people. Because in the businesses that I'm working with growth startups and scale-ups, we're not usually functioning with very big budgets to have a lot of ad dollars, for example, to be targeting a bunch of different segments. Because when you look at targeting different segments and these different communication strategies, that equals different marketing funnels. And different marketing funnels have different costs. So first is a brand clarity process. We go through the brand, we make sure, are we targeting the right people? Are we communicating with them properly? Then we do an audit on the marketing strategy, right? So we look at what I call the 24/7 marketing flywheel. So this is like a 6-stage process that every client prospect will go through, to first understanding and knowing about your brand and what you do, to converting into a paying customer, and then eventually a raving fan. That's the idea. So there's 6 stages to the 24/7 marketing flywheel. This is how I develop marketing strategies. And when I go into work with an organization, and let me tell you, I've worked with businesses that are like, you know, 6 figures up until founders that are 9+ figures, right? And you'd be surprised to know that there are a lot of businesses that get quite far, but there are so many opportunities in the marketing strategy in this flywheel system. So we have, you know, the awareness strategy, we have engage, nurture, invite, delight, and advocate. So we look at each of these stages. In the awareness stage, we're saying, how are we reaching new clients, new customers, new prospects? What strategies do we have in place churning each and every day to reach brand new people? And the point here is brand new people, right? And then we analyze that. Okay, we're running ads. How are the ads performing? Do we have multiple lead gen sources? Or are we just relying on one thing, like just on a Meta, for example? There's a lot of businesses that are built just on the back of Meta, but then when Meta is being shitty and it's not giving that return, everything sucks, right? You say, oh God, I don't want to be depending my whole life on Mark Zuckerberg, right? So we look at that awareness stage and we make sure that we've got diversified lead gen channels and that they are producing for us. And if not, that's something we need to fix. Then we move on to the next layer, which is the engage. And this stuff is the stuff that you know and the stuff that you learn, but it's like you're saying lead magnets, right? How are we getting that email address? What are we exchanging? What a value are we exchanging in order to continue to nurture, which is the next stage. We need that email address to nurture, right? When we have that email address, we're nurturing our customers. We're getting them ready to buy with us, right? So we're building that like, know, and trust factor, and we're getting them ready to purchase. That first 3 steps of the marketing is so incredibly important to be aligned with the sales team, right? Because if those first 3 stages are not aligned, then you're going to be giving shitty leads to the sales team. You're going to get people that are not ready to buy. So working very closely with the sales leader and building at that front end and make sure the right people are coming in is the first part of the marketing flywheel. So once you have people in your nurture world, so this is people listening to your podcast, people looking at your social media, people that are consuming your emails, right? Having regular email communication, which I hope I should be on your regular email communication. Make sure your team gets on your, so I can analyze it and give you feedback. But once you have people in that nurture track, that is the precise moment when you start pulling people out of your nurture track and putting them into your sales funnels. Okay. So we want to make sure that we're attracting those people. We're getting them interested in what we do. We're getting them queued up to what we do, how we can serve them, and we're connecting with them. And then we need to have points in the year where we're having dedicated campaigns scheduled into our promotional calendar that is taking people out of that nurture and putting them into those sales funnels. And the ultimate goal of that sales funnel is to get on the sales call, right? Or to get to the demo or to get to the sales page or whatever it is. But that is our invite phase. Once we've made the sale, though, we're not done. We have to delight the customers with an amazing experience. So that's like the onboarding, the customer service, all of that. But marketing can affect that very, very much. And then finally, we have the advocate stage. So when we make really happy customers, we can then use those customers to help fill the pipeline again, fill that flywheel again through testimonials and case studies. So I'll put this into action for you. So one of the companies that I work for called Elevate Leadership. So it's a leadership, leadership training platform. It's a SaaS company. When I started with them, we have like brilliant minds. We have a Oxford graduate trainer who's a psychiatrist who created all of the trainings. We have a rock star sales VP from I want to say she was from Ford or GM or something. So really, really switched on. But when I came in, there were, again, just this, a lot of manual outreach, a lot of manual relationships, a lot of physical time being taken from the two founders to be able to pull in the revenue that was needed. So we went through this whole process. So usually to kind of setting up the first stage of this process, which is kind of getting that brand dialed in and getting that marketing growth strategy, that's like the first 90 days of me working with a client. So we after we align the brand, we look at that growth strategy. And the first thing we attack is we say, where are the pieces missing in the 24/7 marketing funnel, right? And I'll get to the results, but these are the pieces that I hope that people are hearing, because tactically, this is how we do it. When I was starting up in marketing and I had to freaking figure it out, I was like, the frameworks are so important because it guides you on what the hell you should be doing every day. And a lot of like teachers out there on the internet that are not doing it every day. I think it's like there's little tactics, like this is how you grow your Instagram, or this is how you make a podcast, for example. But that's only a piece of the puzzle. And that's why people are just throwing shit at the wall all the time. And they're saying, how come this is not producing? It's because the flywheel has to be. Yes, exactly. And the way that we measure that results, we get those results, is by implementing the flywheel. So you need all the stages of the flywheel to be churning in order to really get the benefits from it, right? So when you lay out this plan and you're like, okay, I'm doing this, I'm not doing this, I am doing this, oh, I need someone to help with that. The flywheel is your basis for understanding what you need to accomplish in a quarter, right? You need to understand these are your quarterly goals. These are your marketing quarterly goals. Finish the flywheel, okay? Then when you understand what you need to accomplish, you need to say, who's in my team? Can my team do what needs to be done? Or do I need to get someone new or a subcontractor or someone to do project to be able to fill out this flywheel? So it gives you direction for what you should be working on. Where I find a lot of like small business owners, especially, it's like there's so much overwhelm and there's such a lack of resources that you need to be so smart and lean in who you bring in and what they're executing. So when you have your flywheel laid out, you have your marching orders. You know what you should be working on and you know who you need to do it. So in the case of Elevate Leadership, that's just where we got started. We said, okay, listen, we don't have a consistent way to attract leads. So it was like, we're manually building these relationships, and partnerships are an amazing way to grow a business for very cheap, but it takes your time. So at some point, we need to move away from those manual partnerships and we say, what is going to be our repeatable system that can always be growing? So for them, we said, okay, we need to implement our advertising strategy and we need to make sure that we're nurturing these people. So when they get on the call with you, they are queued up, right? So they went from doing, a thousand leads a month from getting 10xing their leads just by implementing this system. And at the end of 6 months, they had $8 million of opportunities in their pipeline from implementing the system, where, again, they were pushing and pulling and scrimping for, you know, that first million into their pipeline. Within just the first 6 months, we were able to 10x the amount of leads that they got. And now what's beautiful about that, when the marketing is working like that, well, then you say, okay, now I can really figure out what's going on with sales, because I have a consistent pipeline that's giving me more or less the same kind of leads. So now when you're going to assess your sales conversations, when you're going to assess, okay, those show rates or those sales scripts, like how effective are they? How effective is the follow-up? You have a consistent lead that you can be measuring everything against. So then when that passes off to you, it becomes much easier. The problem is that there's so many variables on marketing and in sales. The variables are so vast on the types of people they're talking to and all this stuff that it's very hard to figure out like what is actually going on. So when you go into a situation and you're like, how come these leads aren't converting? Well, first we need to figure out, well, who are you talking to? Where are they coming from? Are they ready? Are they queued up? All of this stuff. So the system is what is really where the gold is. So my system is the brand, the marketing strategy. We lay that out. We get the team in, right? We help. When I'm building teams, I build the right team. So we make sure we get the right people to execute, or we fill in with freelancers or project people. You don't have to have a mega full marketing team, everyone full time. There's a lot of things that are project work, but you need some really good, we need one or two really good players to be managing the organic side and to be managing those funnels and those paid side, right? But aside from that, we can fill in with a lot of subcontractors and things like that. So we kind of make our org chart and we understand what we need. And then last but not least is really the leadership piece. And this is like what you were talking about before, which is really, and I wanted to loop back to what you had said about leading the sales team. I think this is the piece that, you know, when I'm leading teams as a fractional marketing director, I take very, very seriously, right? How do we develop people? How do we give them feedback? All of this stuff. And what you were talking about is that's something that a lot of business owners have a hard time doing. How do we course correct? Even when the data is in front of them, it's sometimes not easy to give that feedback. It's not easy to fire people. It's not easy. So in addition to everything that you're giving to business owners to help grow their sales, I do want to say, like, for the founders that are in my accelerator that I'm more coaching, this is a huge part of it, right? How do we know when to let someone go? How do we know how to give feedback? Because we like this person, but we need to communicate how they can do something better. All of this is a huge part of leadership and developing your people. And when you stop selling physically yourself or handling all the marketing yourself in your own hands, the role of the sales lead or of the business owner, it's that leadership role. It's that development role. And the software that you have is going to be great for giving them the data. But what they also need is, what do they do with the data? Right? So that's like another piece that I wanted you to consider that you should put in the book.
I 100% agree. Love to put it in the book. So like under our accountability module, we call it accountability through achievement. So literally, if you look at our software on the left side, it says SMART: sales, marketing, achievement, retention, and training. And underneath that, that rewards or the accountability or achievement, there's goals, right? Which are KPIs for the corporates out there, right? There's first and foremost, everybody starts with a goal or a KPI in 30, 60, 90 days onboarding. Right? Saves them tens of thousands of dollars. But then underneath that, you got the goals. But then underneath that, you have contests, you have competition, you have challenges individually or collectively, you have rewards. There's a whole reward center.
Yeah.
Underneath that is coaching.
Yeah.
So whenever you onboard somebody, you take notes, you assign them what they're going to be doing for 30, 60, 90 days a year, their level of development, everything is set. Now they have to go and do it. And if they don't do it, then it makes it easy for the founder.
Yeah.
And the way you make it easy for the founder is no one likes to fire people. Like, we're all good, or we all want our people to get fired up.
Right.
But we don't want to fire them. So how do you literally, so we built social into the sales machine. There's literally a social media feed in our, you can send emojis to your colleagues. You can send gifts within the platform because they're going to do this anyway, whether they're doing it on TikTok, might as well keep them in our system. So that's what we did. So here's the thing. People will bullshit you as a founder one-on-one all day long.
Yeah.
They'll talk about their problems. They'll talk about their everything of why they are not getting their job done.
Yeah.
Why they're not fulfilling what they committed. They will bullshit you one-on-one. But when you create an environment where they have to stand and deliver in front of their peers, and it goes every week when you're, I call it an MMA meeting. We manage, measure, and adjust. Just like mixed martial arts. You manage, measure, and adjust every week. Just like mixed martial arts. Because in the marketplace, you're going to get your ass kicked if you're not making incremental gains. Like you talked about, it's really expensive, right? So when these founders hire these people, the people will bullshit the founder one-on-one or their manager. But in front of their peers, if they're not performing, you know what they do? They give all the owners a gift. They resign. They quit. Does that make sense? Yeah, MMA. So just like mixed martial arts, if you're not performing or if you're not aware of the marketplace, you're going to get your ass kicked, like you said. Yeah. And if you're throwing money in the wind at marketing campaigns, whether it's with your salespeople, your marketing executives, is your customer service, if you can't manage, measure, and adjust weekly, you're going to get your ass kicked, just like MMA. That's why I call it MMA. And we've set it up in the system. So a lot of founders, like you said, they're getting bullshitted. People will bullshit you one-on-one or bullshit a manager one-on-one. But the reason we set up the sales machine to have this accountability is when you set the system and you guys agree to your goals when you hire that individual, if they're not doing their work, they get notifications. And if you're having them stand and deliver in front of the group, they'll bullshit you one-on-one, but in front of their peers, after a couple weeks, 3-4 weeks, and they're not achieving something, guess what they do then? They quit. So you're not the bad guy. You're not the bad guy. They didn't do their job. Like I had somebody leave recently, right? Actually, a couple people. And I was celebrating because I'm like, fuck, man, I paid you a lot of money and you created nothing. But then what they like to do is they like to turn it around like it's the company's fault. It's the product's fault or I didn't get enough support. Really? Yeah. You had a year and a half. Really? Yeah. You had $1 million pipeline. Really? You fucking delivered nothing. And you know what? Yeah. What they'll do is so that they look good. They'll make the founder wrong or they'll make the company wrong or the product wrong. When in actuality, you hear them in front of colleagues say, I can sell anything. I've been there, done that. The product is sellable. And then they don't do it. Right. So I understand those challenges.
And it's even worse. And it's even worse when you have founders that don't. And in smaller businesses, it's tough because, you know, you as an experienced sales leader, you can kind of sniff the bullshit and someone tries to throw it back. You kind of can weed it out. You know what the truth is. But for someone that doesn't have that confidence leading the team and they're building the team, they're more susceptible to saying, okay, yeah, maybe it is my fault and keeping people on longer than maybe they deserve to be, right? And then just wasting money. So.
Yeah, and I've made that mistake myself. 100% made that mistake. And over and over again, when you change industry, a lot of the times you can be seduced. Have you ever been seduced?
Yeah.
I have.
In what sense?
Right? In what sense? Stop right there. Yeah, exactly. So I have one final question, a couple more questions. So how are you leveraging AI, and how do you think people, because let's be real relevant right now with people can use to grow their business, whether they hire you or work with the sales machine, how should people be leveraging AI for their business?
Let me tell you, I think AI for the marketing teams that I lead and for the founders that I work with, like, AI is absolutely helping everyone go faster. So the copywriters that I, and the social media managers, like, even if they're not telling you that they're using AI, everyone's using it for writing, period. Like, you can sniff it out. But the good side to that is that the turnover on things, or the, like, how quickly things are done, it's incredible. Because, maybe, you know, to be able to summarize something or to create posts or to create blogs and all of that stuff, like, it absolutely helps you move faster. And I think that from a, like, a headline perspective, a hook perspective, an SEO perspective, there's incredible things, ways that marketing teams can leverage AI. Because there's this tedious work of keyword research and SEO optimization and all these things. It absolutely helps you get started. But as far as I can, at this particular moment, I think you definitely need someone to manage all of the AI efforts. So a lot of the content teams that I work with, they'll produce tons of Instagram reels or YouTube reels, shorts, right, with AI. But you still need that discerning eye to tell, to sort of say, okay, this snippet is going to be more like, it's going to land better, or this hook is better. So I feel like AI helps you do the grunt work a lot, and helps your teams move faster to do the grunt work. But that discerning eye, that, like, the curation of it is absolutely necessary right now. I don't see something that's replacing that. And there's a lot of businesses and a lot of marketers that try to get away with just, like, cutting and pasting. And it sucks. Like, especially the worst is with recruiting, because when you're trying to get people and getting resumes, it's like all of the cover letters are written by AI, has the same BS, like, first intro lines. Like, it's hard to kind of siphon out, who's actually putting in the effort and who's being genuine, because they're just doing things really quickly. So my teams leverage AI to go faster.
Yeah, and I got a great example of that. That it's great that you point that out. I just ran an ad for an HR manager. And so, you get a lot of the resumes and or the cover letters, but ultimately, like, what I look at, what are the other efforts outside of the general efforts? And a lot of them add me on LinkedIn and then send me a personal message outside of the resume, the cover letter. I'm like, ooh, now this. And I look at how many LinkedIn followers do they have? What are their accomplishments? And are they competitive, right? Have they won awards? Like, I go deeper because I want better. I go deeper because I want better.
Absolutely. And it's so funny how low of a lift it is to really stand out these days. Because it's not, sending a personalized message is not crazy, but in today's age where everything is automated, how many automated messaging and automated sales sequences do you get via email and via DM? So I think there's a time and a place for maybe starting some conversation or sending like your lead magnets or inviting people to check something out. But when you move into kind of that relationship building, I think that it's hard to replace that human connection, One way, though, I think that AI is really useful, thing that I'm leveraging right now, are like automations for social media for sending DMs. So, for example, if someone is looking at a social post that you have and you're saying, oh, if you want to check out my podcast, send me the message or comment on this post podcast, and then we'll send you a link to the podcast. This is a very good strategy because it gets engagement on your posts or your company posts. So it works in that way because you want people having comments and all that stuff. But it's a way that you can employ that automation so you don't need your social media manager making sure it'll be checking DMs and be sending links. There's automation. ManyChat is one of them where you just a software where it'll just pull that comment and send an automated link. So that's really helpful. So those little automations are incredible. But for sort of ChatGPT, it's really like a copy, sort of blogs and newsletters and getting you started. And then you just put in the extra effort to make it much better and much more natural.
Because I just called out my team and I do it for everyone's benefit. And I say, look, okay, guys, look at this 5-part framework. Look at this 6-part framework. So if we look at this and we talk about the system, like what Victoria is saying, or whether it's Alex Hormozi, or there's a lot of different mentors out there that are, some are legit, right? I said, okay, look at our 5-part framework. Now, in this spectrum, where are we at? Because I'm doing the content, I'm training salespeople all the time, and you guys are capturing my methodologies and my psychology. So where is the disconnect? And it's engagement. And I said, okay, great. So we have no engagement. Why is that? What is the challenge there? I mean, 30 people liked it, 150 liked it. Yeah, so we have all these likes and or we have people commenting, and you're just sending back emojis. You're not asking them questions. Yeah. What did you come here for? What did you like about the post? You have 30 leads. If they liked it, you can follow up with them. There's no engagement. If you want engagement, you got to engage. So
you have, and let me tell you, opportunities come from your brand, your business, your individual, whatever, commenting on other people's stuff. Like, it's real. People follow those threads. They click onto your profile. I'm talking specifically about LinkedIn, for example. But you have to play the game. So your social media manager, I'm not speaking to your specific person. I don't want to call it out, but I'm saying social media managers in general.
See, so many people. See, I do. I call it out, and people are like, "Well, you called me out." Yeah. Well, if I don't, who's gonna?
But it is tough, and I think it is. You know, you have to be genuinely social. That's what the algorithms want, right? They want you to also make the effort. It's not just about you wanting that for your own posts and then responding, but it's like they want to see you be active because your account being active, they're going to reward you for that because it's their business objective to get people engaging and moving. So when they see your brand also engaging, moving beyond your own stuff, that is the algorithm's going to play in your favor more, right? So it's all a game.
Yeah, exactly. And you got to know the rules, right? I used to call it ICE: attract, influence, convert, and elevate. Like, the, you know, there's a lot of, there's eight other
acronyms for everything, John.
I do, because I, you know, my goal, like you said earlier, is to take the complicated and make it very simple. So acronyms allow me to do that, because like the SMART framework, a lot of people, do you have a CRM? Yes. Okay, great. Is it SMART? What? Yeah. Does it have sales, marketing, accountability, retention, and training in there? That's SMART. No, yeah. It doesn't. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I get it. All right. So the fabulous framework, right? Fab. This is, you're not going to forget that, because I know how you learn.
I love that.
I know how you learn. I know your brain. I know that when I can simplify things, then people can learn sooner rather than later, and they'll retain it, right? Yeah. So I trained with Blair Singer, Robert Kiyosaki, Tony, but I trained with educators, like high-level interactive educators. Even my son goes to Montessori school, so...
Yeah.
It's all experiential learning for that little dude. Exactly. And that little dude at 6 years old last week, he just got his blue belt.
That's
yeah.
Serious.
Yeah, it's serious. And he's cool. So, what's next for you? And, you know, and then where can people find you?
Yeah. Well, this has been so much fun. It's been such a joy to talk with you and hear all your stories and rap about sales and marketing. So yes, I'm Victoria Hager. I love to hang out on LinkedIn. That's like my spot. So Victoria Hager, H-A-J-J-R. But my company is called Ugly Ventures because business can be really ugly. And my hope is to help sort of iron and smooth out and end the overwhelm in marketing for founders and help to create beautiful marketing programs. So people can find me at uglyventures.com. And I work as a fractional marketing director, take on very few clients, but I love to be in the game. But I also run an accelerator for female founders. And that's all that information is on uglyventures.com/accelerator.
Okay, cool. And what's next for you? Like, where do you see yourself in 3 to 5 years?
Well, I think that my hope is to really be able to hone in on just working with one or two fractional CMO clients and really growing the accelerator side of the business. So I just launched it just this past year. And the reason I did is because I had so many women, so many founders in my communities, in my local, like here in Miami, right? The tech scene is huge. And I love teaching. Like you, I'm a teacher. And they wanted me to work with them. They wanted help, but they weren't in the stage of their business where they needed a fractional marketing director. They just weren't there, a fractional CMO. And so I've started working with cohorts of founders and just bringing them through my playbooks, just teaching them the playbooks, but then meeting with them each and every week to kind of look at their numbers, dig into their particular problems. So it's like they get me every single week and I'm working with them. But again, it doesn't make sense for me to be driving the marketing and then building that big marketing department because they're just not there yet. But just like you, I'm so passionate about helping those smaller business owners make that leap, right? Because for smaller business owners to be, you know, getting into making their first millions in their business and beyond, it changes their lives and it changes the lives of everyone in their life. And for me, I find that so rewarding. And that's what I hope to do is just teach more and then be able to just do very few fractional CMO stuff. But I love to be in the game because in marketing, you need to be in it and know what's working and what's not working. So I kind of, and you have mentioned this a couple of times, right? When you kind of get out of the game and you're just teaching, I feel that also is it puts you at a disadvantage and that kind of makes you like everyone else. So.
Yeah. Like the guy who says, or the woman, I read 1,000 books. And I'm like,
let me tell you,
that's fantastic. What did you implement and what did you create? Because I don't give, yeah. I don't care you read 1,000 books. I have 1,000 books, more than 1,000 books. And truth be told, I haven't read all those 1,000 books. It looked good at Barnes & Noble or on Amazon. So I'm like, oh, I'm putting that in my arsenal. I'm putting that in my arsenal. I'm putting that in my arsenal. And when I need a strategy or a tactic, and or if I want to think outside the box, I mind feed every day. But I haven't read cover to cover 1,000 books, and it doesn't matter to me. I've implemented a lot. And that's when you know, you know. Otherwise, you don't know what you're doing. You might be aware of a concept, aware of a strategy, aware. Like my team, they are phenomenal. I'll give it up for my team. And they think they know what they're doing, but they don't. They're just aware. Because if you know what you're doing, as a marketer, what's the ultimate goal as a marketer? Victoria, what's the ultimate goal as a marketer?
Leads, baby.
Leads, baby. I told you I'm falling in love. Same thing I tell them. Yeah. Your whole fucking role is leads, baby. I don't care about
activity. You got me on the podcast. You got me sales training. You got me teaching my frameworks all over the place. But you've got to convert leads. Yeah. And you got to convert leads that are in alignment with sales. Otherwise, you turn into Jerry Maguire's wife. And it's not, you had me at hello. You lost me at hello, baby.
Because if you don't take
those marketing qualified leads and turn them into sales qualified leads, it means you lost me at hello.
Yeah.
You created zero. Yeah. But we're doing all the work. Yeah. So just know that you're aware of it, but you don't know it. You'll know that you know it when you generate the leads, and you'd have the potential to do it, all of you. You're just missing a couple of the tactics. And for us, it's been engagement. And I'm not afraid to admit it. It's real. That's the only way. That's the only way alcoholics get better. You've got to admit it. You got to accept you got a problem. I accept I got a problem. I accept it. I got a problem.
But let me tell you, though, I think that once you, I think one of the biggest problems is not being able to identify the problem. So now there's a lot of shit that you could try to get that metric up. And then at least you have that direction. And I think without that insight, it becomes very hard to grow and to get the results. But you have to knock it down problem by problem. You need to experiment. You know, what I'm just saying here, okay, go engage in with other accounts, for example, but that's probably not going to be enough. So then let's implement a software that helps with engagement. That sends the lead magnets when someone comments this. Maybe that's not enough. And you got to keep going until you find what works.
I absolutely love you, Victoria. And I know your forte is working with women. And, you know, I'll put on a bra and panties to work with you. No, I won't. I'm sorry. That was a joke. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I'll put on a bra, but not panties. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to send a review about what you liked on this podcast or share it with somebody who would need it to definitely improve their business, building and scaling sales teams, do me a favor, like, share. It means a lot to me so that we can help others grow and live in abundance. That's a wrap, folks. Thanks for joining me today. And if you got value from this episode, do me a favor. Like, subscribe, and refer a friend. And if you want even more value, go to thesalesmachine.com, click on resources, and there's tons of resources there to increase profits and drive performance in your business. Right on, right on. Come on.